Hello everyone and welcome back to Donkey's Garage. This is episode 24 of season 2 of the Donkey's Garage. Last week, it was Monza, the Temple of Speed, they're home to the Tifosi, home to Ferrari, home to a large section of the history of motorsport. It is, I think, considered to be a temple in more ways than just as a matter of speed. It holds, I think, a very, very strong history. And it's something that people value. And I think you can see that it continues, especially in Italy as a whole, but in the area, in the vicinity of Monza, continues to be a feeling, a sport that really creates a passion. And I think the best fans, in a way, the Tifosi who really go there and support and show their support to their team, of course, to the national team, which is Ferrari. Not only Ferrari, as a matter of fact, because there is also Alfa Romeo who was racing at home, another Italian car company with a lot of history, more history as a matter of fact than Ferrari has. It is the original brand, the brand that started the whole racing in Italy. And as a matter of fact, it was Enzo who was driving back in those days for Alfa Romeo as a driver, who would then go on to make his own car company and become the symbol perhaps of speed, of refined luxurious speed in Italy. Just as a quick reminder, racing began as a passion for a bunch of car enthusiasts, for speed enthusiasts. But of course, it was a very expensive sport, and it was a sport that would presumably, because of this financial burden, be limited to people with quite a fair amount of money, with a high standard of living. And so financing the whole racing was quite an issue for the teams, because you had, of course, the drivers, who most of them were wealthy people who enjoyed doing this kind of business, driving in certain tracks. They really was just a hobby, as one could say it. But the issue was, how do you finance all the things that come behind, which is to make the car, to develop the car, the engineers, and so on. And so all these led to really a simple solution, which was to make cars and sell them on Monday. So you would race the car on Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday you would sell it to those who could afford very expensive, luxurious cars. And this is how Ferrari became the brand that it is today. It is a brand with rich history, and a large portion of its history is that they've been selling dreams. From the start, they would race the supercars, those beautiful but ultimately racing cars at heart, would race them, and on Monday they would auction them to the highest bidder, and rich people would buy them because they would want to have that very car that won the race on Sunday. It was one way of holding the trophy in their hands. And so Enzo had no issue whatsoever on turning his assets into a high value product, because he just realized that his success would lead him to actually make money, and really not only from winning the races and the prizes you would get for winning the races, but actually get money from that prestige that you would generate as part of your success in racing. And that is something that then has been carried out through history, ever since. And of course, all these brands that announce themselves as supercar companies, all they have to do, first of all, is to create a racing history, because it's the way you prove to the public that your car is superior, that it is a winning material, because it wouldn't be good. People would not be attracted to a brand if they are told, yeah, it's the most competitive car ever, but you have no proof of it. And I guess in a Darwinian sense, in a free competition sense, in a very Adam Smith way, you need free competition in order to let the best come on top. And this is exactly what racing is. Essentially, you're putting all these cars on track, all the drivers, as a matter of fact, everything is combined, and you're literally saying who will come first, and who will come first is actually a combination of the car and the man. And Ferrari is exactly that through history. It's been the car that has made people dream, because if you own a Ferrari, ultimately you have a piece of history in your hands. But if you look at Ferrari, as most of us do, because that's part of the attractiveness of these brands, of these luxurious brands, is that not everyone has them. But when you look at this as a Ferrari, as I say, you look at them on the street and you just stand there, you look at them, you glance at them, you kind of stay still for a couple of seconds. And for a second, you don't realize what you're looking at. You're just kind of seeing an animal that is passively sitting, perhaps parked on the side of the street. But you know that that car, because of its rich history, if you put your foot down, it will absolutely blow your mind. It is the same story for Aston Martin, with a really, really rich history also in Le Mans, which I think it's the ultimate place, the ultimate temple of racing, because as I said during the episode in which I covered this, you're putting the cars to test in the worst and most harsh conditions one could imagine. For 24 hours, you're going full speed, lap after lap, until completing 24 hours. And Formula One has a different philosophy, because it's not so much about endurance, but about sheer speed. It's about the ultimate expression of technology, of engineering. And you see that with downforce, you see that with fuel efficiency, you see that with the tires, you see that with aero, you see that in every way possible. And as I say, Ferrari, when they drive in Monza, they're driving in the nest where they grew up, where they became the brand that it is today. The story, however, today is quite different, because Ferrari is the most successful team in Formula One. I would dare to say it is the most successful team in history as a whole. I know that the numbers actually attribute that to Porsche and to Audi and Le Mans, as a matter of fact, but I think Ferrari has a different connotation. When you speak about racing, you speak about Ferrari, and that's, I think, in a way what Vettel was saying when he said back in the days, we are all Ferrari fans. And all I'm trying to do here is to set the motion to now tell you that when Ferrari race at home, particularly at Monza, and all the tifosi are there watching them, expecting them to win, Ferrari has an immense pressure to do that. They have to deliver all year long. Yes, that's 100% true. But when it comes to driving at the home track, the stakes are twice what it usually is. The pressure is twice. As soon as the drivers touch down in Italy, the tifosi are there. They will follow them. They will absolutely cheer them. And it can be so stressful that it can actually be a burden to drivers. Carlos Sainz was saying how invigorating it was, but also at the same time how exhausting, because you cannot let your guard down. You are all the time under pressure during that weekend. And so it is a weekend that is special in the calendar, and also we could appreciate how Alfa Romeo, who was in a way also experimenting this pressure in a different way, but nonetheless they're Italians, and I think as any nation would say you feel proud of your nationality. They designed a beautiful livery, I have to say, for the home Grand Prix. I think it's one of the most beautiful liveries I've seen in long time. A tribute to Italy. So coming back to what I was saying, it's a special weekend for particularly two drivers, Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. The conditions were very good, I would say. Sunny, hot conditions, perhaps a bit too hot for the liking of some teams, but overall, ideal conditions. Also, I have to mention, it's a low drag track, and this means that when I mean it's, say, the temple of speed, it's because of the insane speeds cars can reach at Monza. 340k easily. Very, very high speed track. You've got the main straight, which is then a beautifully joined at the back by another straight, and the junction between the two straights is actually the Parabolica, which is the replica or perhaps a inspired design of the old Parabolica, which was at a curve with a bit of steep, and when I mean a bit of steep, a lot of steep. Beautiful layout back in the days. It was modified because nowadays you don't have that kind of tracks anymore. Quite sad, I have to say also, but well, it is what it is. I mean, tracks of course change and the designs and needs for cars, and we do know that nowadays tires, with the amount of G's that cars can pull at turns, it would be very, very dangerous to have this sort of curve. But anyway, two big straights, and then a second section which is a bit slower with 90-degree corners and nice chicane that really put drivers to the test. A nice braking zone there also in order to overtake, and it can cause, as I will say later, some incidents during the race. So, getting into the weekend with a qualifying that was, as I said, in the ideal conditions, with Carlos Sainz P1, Verstappen P2, Leclerc P3, Russell P4, Perez P5, followed by Albon, Piastri, Hamilton, Norris, and the top 10 is then completed with Alonso in P10. Quite an exciting qualifying, I have to say, because it was the first time that Verstappen didn't really have it that easily. And as a matter of fact, Carlos was able to snatch that P1 at their home track for Ferrari, which I am certain put a big smile on the face of many tifosi. But as I say this, I already have to mention quite a disappointing scene on Saturday, which was that during the post qualifying interviews, Leclerc was insinuating that he was only P3 because he didn't have a toe, which in a way kind of implies that Carlos should have sacrificed his attempt at pole position in order to benefit him and get P1, presumably. And I think these are absolutely insulting as an F1 fan, as a Ferrari fan, and as a human being, I would say, because for God's sake, I mean, yes, I mean, sometimes there's orders such as giving your teammate toe, but I mean, Carlos, it was doing an absolutely fantastic weekend, and he was ahead all the time. Just don't sacrifice your winning horse in order to please your nice little crying baby. With that said, Verstappen Still, P2, he was really comfortable with it. He did say that he did not find it troublesome for Sunday. He knew he could overtake easily, so no worries on that. With Russell P4, which, I mean, is a quite a decent performance by the Mercedes. They didn't really know how well it would go after a weekend in Zandvoort with a rather poor performance. It's actually a decent result for them. Hamilton qualified P8, which is not ideal. Again, another qualifying which Hamilton doesn't seem to be as comfortable as Russell, who Hamilton in Zandvoort qualified P13. Again, here he's behind his teammate, not something he would appreciate, but overall the Mercedes team seemed to have enjoyed the, in terms of performance, they were doing rather well. Ferrari ahead of them clearly, but still sufficiently close to that P, at least on the top five, which is a good result for them, I would fathom to say. With Perez P5, which is still a bit far away from Verstappen, but overall it seems that he's getting a bit more trust. He feels more comfortable with the car. He did have a shunt at the Parabolica and on the last corner of the track on the free practice, which may have caused him to lose a bit of reassurance and on how to take that corner, but overall decent, with an amazing performance by Albon again, P6. This is, I would say, the ideal track for the Williams, with a really low track layout. They had an amazing top speed, and it did show that during the qualifying they were doing fabulously well. Albon really is looking really strong, and again the race he did a fantastic job, with Piastri and Norris P7 and P9 respectively. Good results. I mean, the McLarens are not shining as much as they were before the summer break, but again, a solid top 10, which is something they should probably cheer, because they were coming from far behind at the beginning of the season. They've got to work on that low drag, on that drag coefficient, but I'm sure it's something that they have under control. Estella, I'm sure, they're working on that. And as we have seen this season, some tracks is more favourable to some, and some other tracks are favourable to others. Of course, always with Red Bull on top. And then the top 10 with Alonso, who was suffering a lot with Aston Martin. We have to be honest about it. With an Aston Martin that doesn't like low track, low high speed tracks, Monza was the opposite of what the Aston Martin enjoys, and we saw him that he was really dragging his feet. So not ideal. Still, I think P10 shows quite a remarkable performance compared to his teammate who qualified P18, which again I would say shows the difference between these two drivers, with Alonso being able to put a car that doesn't feel comfortable in this track still on Q3, and his teammate struggling to get to Q2. I mean, struggling, he failed to do. So, otherwise, Alonso didn't even try on the, his run on Q3. He accepted that he had no chance, so he decided to save on tyres, I would imagine. With that said, straight into the race, what happened? An amazing start by Carlos. He pushed Verstappen, closing the gap at the small gap at the start of the race of the lights. He pushed Verstappen, blocked him, and was able to retain that P1 on the first lap. Amazing job by him, and the rest just followed, with Alonso actually losing a couple of positions, but particularly to Magnussen, to Hülkenberg. Pardon me, to Hülkenberg at the start. The rest of it was shuffling. Perez did quite a good start, and within the first 5-6 laps, he was able to storm through the field. Struggling, actually. Sorry, when I say storming through the field, I am incorrect. He struggled a lot with Russell, which was quite surprising. He was unable to overtake him. So that was quite some underperformance. I think you could see that the Red Bull, as it has been the case over and over over the seasons, these cars struggle a lot to follow cars closely. Now we could see that Perez was struggling a lot to really follow Russell during the first stint. Then he bumped into Leclerc. He did struggle with Leclerc quite a lot. Again, I would say that's due to these specificities of these cars that really struggle to follow one another. With at the back, with Albon, Piastri and Norris having quite a formidable race all along. They were fighting each other, though they did show quite a good performance overall. They ended up with Albon Norris and Alonso, and Piastri was unfortunately the victim of an overzealous Hamilton who tried to overtake him at 1, 2, 3, 4, at turn four, quite unfortunate. The first leg of the chicane, quite unfortunate to be honest. But yeah, Hamilton apologized. He did say that he did not really work out the distance that well, and he didn't do it on purpose. He hit him, and then that was the end. So the race was once again won by Max, with Perez finally coming second, which is a really good result for the team, and I think it will help Perez regain his confidence in his skills in himself. And then good race by Russell. Also, again, Hamilton, he got a 5-second penalty for the incident with Piastri. I wouldn't say he was having a wonderful race. I wouldn't give him a 10 out of 10. I was a bit disappointed with his racing skills at times, of bumping here and there, pushing the car perhaps over limits sometimes with the elbows, but I mean, it's racing, hard racing. Russell had a very, very average race. He was in no man's land. He wasn't really challenged by anyone at any point. So he had an easy race. Albon Norris, wonderful race, trying to get past with Piastri during the first part, and he was a victim of Hamilton. Albon was amazing. He was able to hold off two McLarens and the Aston Martin, although the Aston Martin really didn't really stand a chance. Really, really good result, with Alonso then coming in P9, with a well-deserved P9, because he fought for it, coming back from P11 at the start, having lost the position to the Haas. Really good result. And then Bottas finishing P10, which is an amazing result again for the Italian team at their home Grand Prix. And now, having covered that very succinctly, I would have to say that the big part of the argument that the commentary has to focus on the tremendously humiliating spectacle that Ferrari gave the Tifosi to watch. And what I mean by this is that Carlos started a race P1. He did a fantastic job holding Max Verstappen for over 20 laps, 18 laps. Amazing job defending like I've never seen him before, standing the elbows. He did wonderfully well, especially turn one with Verstappen getting on that slipstream, and then he was fantastic. Carlos was truly fantastic. He got passed by Verstappen, which is something to be expected, something logical, and no one really, really expected any otherwise. But then came Perez. Again, you would expect him. Perez had faster car. He did struggle a lot, though, a lot. And I would say that had Sainz had a bit more tire, he would have been able to defend. But eventually, Perez got past him, not before losing his temper. He did cut the chicane twice at turn one, which, I mean, is not really fair play, but you could see him over the radio. He was losing his patience. He just was a tad faster at that point, and he was not really able to have that sufficient delta to take him easily. So he was struggling a lot. So amazing race by the two of them, but I would say especially to Sainz, who actually got voted driver of the day, and no wonders why. Amazing race in front of his home crowd, the Tifosi, I mean, not the Spaniards. And then came Leclerc, which is where things get funny, because during the part where Carlos Sainz and Max were fighting, Leclerc turned out to be just half a second behind, 8 tenths maximum behind. And he could have pushed a bit harder, tried to annoy Verstappen. I'm not saying overtake him, but just annoy him sufficiently so that Carlos could just get away. Verstappen would overuse his tires, and overall, Ferrari would have been able really to put a fight with both drivers together and try to force Verstappen to commit an error, to make an error, Red Bull to overuse their tires, and eventually maybe had the miracle happened, claim that P1, or at least secure P2. At least secure P2. What happened? Leclerc was selfish. Leclerc was an absolute demon, and I would say an absolute evil, the worst teammate you could possibly ask in history. Maybe not in history, but probably in Ferrari, because he was just 8 tenths behind Verstappen at some point, and he was just under the second gap to Perez during the second stint, where Carlos had to defend for the P2 against bloody Perez, who was storming through with a much stronger car, with a more efficient car, with a faster car at the end of the day, and just he couldn't bloody do it. And what did Leclerc do? I mean, he was just standing behind him and letting Carlos Sainz overuse his tires, absolutely pushed to the limits in order to defend Perez. And then, miraculously, as soon as Perez got past him, what did Leclerc do? Oh, by the way, I can now go and hunt you down, Sainz. And that is absolutely insulting. 15 laps to go, 10 laps to go to the end. Leclerc, they decided to wake up and go for his teammate. His teammate, Carlos Sainz. I mean, their teammates driving, racing at the home track in front of the Tifosi. For God's sake, if there is one place where you have to play teammate, that is Monza. You have to play teammate. And in that very scenario, Carlos Sainz is ahead of you. He's been ahead. He's qualified P1. He's started the race P1. He's done an amazing job defending P1. He's done an amazing job defending P2. For God's sake, just hold positions to the end. P3, P4, which is not ideal, but at least you secure 27 points. And for God's sake, just do it. No, what did Leclerc do? He decided to be a bloody selfish driver, a bloody selfish man, and potentially blow everything up for no reason whatsoever. I mean, they could have potentially been P2, P3 if they had again pushed Perez to make a mistake, because Leclerc could have very easily pushed Perez to make a mistake, coming behind, pushing him, and you know, be that a three-man fight. But no, Leclerc was just standing behind, holding position, and letting Carlos Sainz do his own business. What happened? Perez got passed. Yes, bravo, good job for you. Apparently, Leclerc is the sort of person who says, if I'm not winning, no one is winning. No one other than me is winning. And that is what he was trying to show. And then 10 laps to the end, he starts grilling Sainz lap after lap. And of course, Sainz doesn't have a DRS like Leclerc does. And Sainz was was defending once again. I have never seen him before. He was showing the true colors. He was showing why he deserves a seat in Formula One. And look like he's just going for it. He's just pushing Sainz to defend like hell. And potentially, both of them make a mistake and go against the barriers and lose it all. And one lap to the end, on the final bloody lap, what did Leclerc do? He went so close, that in order to avoid crashing with Sainz, he had to take evasive action, blocked off bloody four wheels, cut the chicane on turn one, and I don't know why, but for some good miracle, very good miracle, they did not hit each other. But I would have to say that had it happened, I would have been pleased, because Ferrari showed they are pathetic. They are insultingly pathetic, and it's absolutely insulting that this team allows this to happen in front of their home crowd. I'm always saying let drivers do their business. They have to race and they have to race hard. But for God's sake, when you have to deliver in front of your home crowd, just abide by the rules. Any other track, go for it, smash it, and do whatever you want. But in front of your home crowd, I would have shot Leclerc. I would have, if I had been Enzo Ferrari back in the days, and Leclerc, I mean, ruins a race at Monza, I would have called him in and say, "You're fired." You know, the team goes before anything else. And I blame Leclerc for being a selfish driver. I don't want to insult him, so I'm just going to keep it at selfish. But the other person who's there to blame too is bloody Frederic Vasseur, who is a team principal, has a duty to look for the interests of the team and not just the drivers. He should have told Leclerc, hold bloody position, don't fight, stay behind. And somebody might say, oh, they did it. Yes, they did it three laps to the end. He let Leclerc grill Sainz for seven laps before taking that decision. And then after the race, he justified all that, saying, oh, I like hard racing. Bloody you like hard racing. When Leclerc is in front, you bloody have no trouble telling Sainz hold position. You have no trouble whatsoever telling Sainz that you have to play the good teammate. So if it happens one way, it should happen the other way around. And ultimately, drivers from the same team can never, never hit each other, because that is the ultimate sin in racing sport. You are both driving for the same team. You're both, you, above any selfish thought, you have to put the interest of the team on top. And this is something that you saw at McLaren, again in Monza, between Norris and Piastri. They did hit each other, and that is something insulting. And Zak Brown did actually say this is intolerable, because, I mean, it's something that we cannot accept, two drivers from the same team potentially ruining the whole effort of the team together. I mean, no, that's just not acceptable. Ferrari, the management, they have a deep issue. They have a seriously deep issue they need to work out. I would say fire Leclerc, because he is trouble to Ferrari. He's a driver that doesn't accept that he is below Ferrari. Ferrari is the team, and at Ferrari, everyone works for Ferrari, because the success of Ferrari is the goal. Leclerc was for himself, as we've seen over and over again. And Frederic Vasseur has only come to materialize and to really crystallize that into fact, because he keeps looking after his little baby and forgetting about the interest of the team over and over again. Not to mention that Sainz is actually ahead of Leclerc in the Drivers' Championship. That's all I have to say. And to finish this point, I would say that there is, in the near future, a decision to be made by Carlos Sainz whether or not to remain a Ferrari to renew his contract or to leave. And I would say that if these conditions persist, I would leave Ferrari. I wouldn't even ask to be renewed. I would tell them, thank you very much, but go screw yourself, because at the end of the day, you're ruining my chances at victory, because you're letting this selfish, unsportsmanlike driver take the better of the team. I am giving 100% of my efforts, 100% of who I am, and this man is just ruining everything. So yes, if something is to be said, I would say Carlos Sainz is not the one who should get fired, but the other way around, he should literally say thank you very much and I'm walking away. Because Ferrari now have this interesting debate as to what to do with the drivers in the near future. They have, I mean, Leclerc, there's no question whatsoever, he's going to be renewed. My question would be if their loyalty has been misplaced, because if Ferrari continues not to be successful, I'm not sure Leclerc is going to be so faithful to Ferrari as they expect him to be. And he might be the one who, from day to night, he says, bye-bye, baby, I'm going elsewhere. I wouldn't be surprised. And, yeah, Sainz, the best thing he could do would be to walk away, go, for instance, to add it to the future team, build the team around him, and really turn that team into a winning team, which I am 100% sure they will become a winning team, because when the Volkswagen Group get their hands into something, you can definitely be certain that they will win in that sport, be that rallies, be that endurance, or potentially be that Formula One. With that said, you can still probably feel that I am quite passionate about what happened at Monza. Annoyed in a way, but also passionate Ferrari fan as always. And yeah, sorry for bringing my observations so late. Busy week, and yeah. But I still wanted to give my opinion about what happened at Monza. Any other how, next week is Singapore, if I am not mistaken. So quite, there's a lot of potential next week for Aston Martin. Perhaps not so much for Ferrari. So we'll see. Some interesting, perhaps not so much for Mercedes either. So I don't know, we'll see. Yeah, with that said, thank you very much as always for listening. Thank you very much for continuing to tune in to the Donkey's Garage to make it successful. The fan base continues to grow, so it's quite fantastic to see the success and to see that people respond to it. So yeah, thank you very much as always. Follow, subscribe, share if you want. Leave comments if you want to join the show at any point. Do leave a message. And with that said, have a good Sunday.